Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hello again, friends, and hello, Nick.
Hey, Angie.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. It's been kind of a, I feel like spring is in the air, but it's like stubbornly holding out. We actually had our first big rainstorm since winter hit the other night. And something very creepy happened. Actually, I'm going to quickly tell you this story because I think you would appreciate it. The lightning struck like huge. There was this huge lightning strike, this huge thunder crash, and our doorbell rang. Like at 2 a.m. And you know how that happens sometimes when the lightning will hit and like car horns will go off? And so I think it was connected to that, but it was very like unsettling because that's never happened before.
Yeah, that sounds so spooky.
Yeah. So, you know, but this is a 100-year-old house I live in now. So who knows? But I feel like if you were here, you would have some feels.
Yeah, I definitely have some feels. I'm not even there where you are, but I love that.
Yeah,
it's definitely on the cusp of spring and I feel myself kind of coming alive. My plants are starting to kind of pop their heads out of the ground and that's really exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited for another reason, and it's because of today's topic, which air horn sounds, meow, 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 but we're going to talk about glamour magic today, which is one of my favorite things to play with within the magical realm. So I guess you have the definitions. You did a little bit of research. Do you want to tell us all a little bit about like the origins of the word glamour?
Yes, absolutely. And also you are definitely one of the most glamorous people that I know. So I'm very excited to hear about this from you. And, you know, you're always looking amazing. So I can't wait. But So I went when I was preparing for this episode, I did not know the root. You know, I'd heard some stories about glamour and kind of that it came from like a magical place or sort of meant a magical spell, but I didn't realize it's roots go deeper than that into the word grammar, which was really interesting. So according to our friend Merriam-Webster on Merriam-Webster.com, the word glamour comes to English from Scots, which is the English language as spoken in Scotland. And in the early 1700s, the Scottish altered the English word grammar to create glamour, which was G-L-A-M-E-R or glamour, G-L-A-M-O-U-R, meaning a magic spell, literally. So in that way, like words are literally spells, like we say all the time. And the Scottish weren't the only ones to associate grammar with magic spells. In classical antiquity, the Greek and Latin ancestors of the English word grammar were used in reference to not only the study of language, but also to the study of literature. And going back even further to the medieval period, the Latin grammatica was extended to just mean learning in general. So that would have included mystical subjects such as magic and astrology. People that didn't understand these languages, because often it was taught in Latin, you know, just like the church often was doing their services in Latin. So people didn't really understand even, you know, what was really happening. There was sort of a sense of like awe and mystery and kind of suspicion around sort of being learned, you know, in the sense of the word grammatica. And it wasn't until the mid 1800s that the word glamour started to separate from its magical connotations, though those connotations weren't and still aren't entirely gone. But glamour in its modern sense, meaning an exciting and often illusory and romantic attractiveness and alluring or fascinating attraction, which still has, you know, a bit of a magical connotation to it. So I just found that kind of rabbit hole of history really, really, really fascinating.
It is. And, you know, the first time I ever heard of it, I was kind of hearing it in association with the Gilded Age, which kind of gilded isn't like fully gold or fully, you know, whatever it is on the outside. It kind of implies that it's being covered by something. It's shiny on the outside, but not all the way through. And in Icelandic, there's a similar word that means illusion, and the root word is gleam. So I think it's really interesting because it implies that it's not kind of the substance underneath it is not like what we're seeing on the outside. And we see this kind of like echoed in vampiric lore, is, you know, where else we kind of see it popularly is like the glamour is an illusion or a spell that's cast on the person. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's really interesting because my experience with glamour is more embodiment of like an energy that I want to radiate. And I think that's the glamour, you know. The illusion is just kind of the things we put on or the rituals that we do in order to harness that energy. But, you know, like I heard this really great story once. It was an interview with David Bowie, and if you've seen this on my social media, I talk about this all the time because it was a real aha moment for me. But this interview with David Bowie, he talks about like his creation of Ziggy Stardust. And so he talks about like his being David Jones before taking on Ziggy Stardust as an alter ego. But he talked about like his anxiety being so paralyzing that he would hate to go out on stage, and it would kind of get in the way of his performances too. But the way that he could kind of bypass that is if he created this outlandish alien from outer space that was brazen and bold and wild, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was his glamour. He created Ziggy Stardust in order to bypass his anxiety. And the irony is that it was him the whole time, you know, it just kind of elevated himself and brought out his essence and then created, you know, Ziggy Stardust is kind of an alter ego that has, you know, it's got a life of his own basically now. But I think that's really, really cool. So we can use glamour in that way to kind of help us believe in ourselves. Yeah.
Right. That reminds me of like Beyonce, who oftentimes talks about, you know, sort of this alter ego that she takes on when she goes onto the stage, and that's not, you know, who she really is. Mm-hmm. And also just, you know, my theatrical background, like just taking on a character, you know, and transforming into someone when you step, you know, onto the stage. But, you know, that brings me to a question that I'm curious about for you, you know, because I think it's important to talk about it coming from the inside as well as, you know, from the outside, mm-hmm. like you're saying. So how do you approach that? I mean, how does glamour magic not just become, I guess, in a way, feeling like you're not enough? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that you're putting something on to become something. Like, how do you approach it so that it feels empowering?
That's a good question. I think about one of my first like pop culture references, which was the movie Teen Witch, if you've ever seen that. Mm-hmm. She uses this spell to become the most popular girl. And there's like a whole montage of her being the most popular girl, and it's so much fun until it's not. And then, you know, she's realizing that people just want to be near her because of her popularity and not because the actual substance underneath. So she starts to kind of shed the layers. And I found that really, really cool because that's what I wanted as a kid, was to be like seen and popular, I guess. I guess that popularity was what I wanted. I wanted to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I wanted friends. I wanted belonging. And so that's what I wanted, but it came by way of popularity. So to answer your question, I think when I approach glamour magic, it is, what am I wanting to radiate? What is the energy I want to tap into? You know, and so. And I have like one spell that I use pretty often. I have it for my like fringe. I have a collection of fringe leather jackets that are vintage. And I think about like Sloan from Ferris Bueller, that kind of effortless, cool girl. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I kind of do. I look for that like ease. I look for that effortlessness. And that's what I kind of try to tap into inwardly. And I put it in my leather jackets, but it's not the leather jacket that's doing the work for me, right? Like it's me injecting that into the garment that I'm wearing. You can really do that with any like thing. It doesn't have to be a garment, but yeah, that the energy is mine. I'm just elevating it. It's like putting salt on something, just making it bigger.
Yeah. So sort of like put us in your shoes, like, cause you also do so much with your makeup, which I think is really, mm-hmm. you know, cool. And I'm curious, like how you choose those colors and how you go about that, but like, you know, put us in your shoes. So let's say that like, you know, you wake up one morning and, you know, you decide that you want to do some glamour magic that day. Like how, mm-hmm. what is your process for like approaching what you're going to adorn yourself with?
Oh, I love that question. I did one really recently because in the same kind of vein of that like effortless coolness, I was inspired by Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And he has these scenes where he's just disgusting looking, but absolutely like so alluring. He's grimy and sweaty and, you know, all of that stuff. So what I kind of did is when I was approaching it, I wanted that kind of like glow from that post-workout glow, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I went for like a facial oil, and then I did this really grungy brown and black and kind of nude tones around my eye, and then just smudged it out. I love to kind of like use looks like that that I can wear because I do also sweat a lot and I need it to mm-hmm. see. So that's kind of how I approached it in a more like practical way, but it was really oriented towards like, I want it to be that kind of like grimy. I'm just busting in through a door like Aragorn.
Yeah,
model off duty vibe, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Do you have any stories when you've done glamour magic and you've seen like results from the outside? Like obviously, you know, you probably feel some internal results, but you know, have there been any like external results or any ways that it's affected, you know, the world around you in any kind of way that you could share?
I use little charms for, and this is kind of a like maybe not so popular one anymore. I think these charms have kind of fallen out of favor, but like invisibility charms. I use those all the time. And I use them over my car, you know, in situations where like I need to go somewhere quick, but I'll also use them on my sunglasses. And it's really effective mm-hmm. for me there. And it feels like you pass very under the radar. And it's been really interesting. It does feel like I'm a fly on the wall in some instances. It's very subtle mm-hmm. and you might not notice it if you weren't like kind of actively trying to create that. But yeah, that's one example of like ways that I use it and I've gotten external results.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Which brings me, so I wanted to highlight that for people because I think we think about it as being very ornate or very kind of loud. And it doesn't have to be. It can be really, really simple. It can be in the form of like a bath, you know, or mm-hmm. Cute underwear or, you know, anything. It really can be anything as long as you bring the intentionality to it and you can use whatever you have on hand. So, and you can also make it like the extreme. There's a really great series that Vogue does on YouTube. And so I'd encourage anyone to kind of go and look at that. But they have a series called Extreme Beauty. And there's an artist that really inspires me called Hungry. And Hungry does a lot of like sculpting of like pieces that kind of make their face look like an insect. Mm. They've actually worked a lot with Bjork in constructing these nose pieces and pieces that fasten to their eyebrows and things like that make them look like a flower or, you know, like an orchid or a praying mantis and things like that. And it's fascinating. Mm. So it can definitely be that extreme glamour if you want it to be, but it doesn't have to be. And, you know, even if we wanted to bring it down to a more relatable level, drag is glamour. You know, your office wear is glamour. Even your like Zumba wear. Zumba people are so loud and extravagant, but like I don't wear a whole lot of color except for when I'm teaching mm-hmm. Zumba. mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so what this is making me think about is the effects that maybe it has, and I've never thought about this before, but the effects it has on us when we are told what we have to wear, you know, like is it another form of glamour magic, like in a not empowering way, perhaps, where, you know, we have to wear a uniform, where the clothing is placed onto us. I mean, what do you think about that?
Oh, I love that. It's kind of a corner that I haven't explored, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. So conformity and everybody being the same for this sake, like they do that in private schools a lot, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of enforce this notion of conformity. Everybody obey.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about ballet, you know, when I had you on the first episode, but it makes me think about that again and the impact that we're having on, you know, students saying like, you have to wear these clothes and it is gendered, you know, there is a certain gender conformity as well. And yeah, I think that maybe we should think about the spell that we're casting, you know, on people when we do that. That's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, I will have to be sitting with that because that's kind of a thought that I hadn't considered.
Yeah.
You brought up like mask versus femme and binaries and gendered clothing. And I love that thought because when I'm talking to my spouse, we often talk about like how many fun things there are to experiment with as a feminine presenting person, but there aren't a whole lot of options, or there haven't been, I guess I should say, much more recently for male presenting people, for masculine presenting people. So we kind of had a conversation about this privately, but we were talking about like the invention of the binary, and we want to credit Alok Vaidmanon for their work and their research on this because we both have been so, our learning has been expanded by Alok in so many ways, but yeah.
I mean, well, the first thing it makes me think about is the fact that in America, and there have been studies done on this, that in America today, we sort of very uniquely out of the world relate being a man to not being a woman. So in other words, there are studies that have been done in other countries where they'll ask, you know, men, how do you define what it is to be a man? And they'll say, you know, they might say it means to be confident, or they might say it means to be caring, or they, you know, they might use different adjectives, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But in America, you'll hear a lot more response saying, it's not, I'm not feminine. I'm not emotional. I'm not, you know, it's sort of, I'm not a woman, basically.
Yeah.
And
that fabric is too soft, too colorful, too shiny, you know, this or that.
Yes. And
which is so funny.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, like, it is really weird and crazy to me to think about the power that clothing does have, and the way that, you know, if a man were to put on a dress or a skirt and go out into the world, I mean, it's one of the most just shocking and sort of explosive things that he could ever possibly do. And it's a piece of fabric. I mean, it's like, what, you know, like why does this, you know, fabric just carry so much just danger? I mean, it feels just revolutionary and kind of dangerous for that to happen.
It's true.
You know? And on the converse, I mean, nowadays in society, women kind of can wear whatever. I mean, like women wear pants, where, you know, there's not really an item of clothing I can think of right now off the top of my head that's like off limits to women, but men, but there definitely are things that are off limits to men. And, and I think that does stem from, again, it being sort of like to be a man is to not be a woman. And so that means there are some, you know, there are limitations around, you know, what a man can wear. But as you were saying from Alok, I mean, one of the biggest things I've learned, you know, Alok shares so much great history, you know, just actual history. And I learned through Alok that a lot of this relates back to the Industrial Revolution, which was a time in our history when men, you know, the what men were wearing before the Industrial Revolution was a lot more, was showing sort of status. So it was, you know, lace, or, you know, it was fancier clothing, more elaborate
velvet.
Clothing, velvet, you know, that it was sort of relating, it was projecting that, those kinds of ideas. But then in the Industrial Revolution, it started to become, okay, men work, you know, men's clothing therefore has to be sort of utilitarian and, you know, jeans and overalls, and it's not frivolous. Whereas women, through eugenics, you know, through the eugenics movement, through this sort of definition of what it is to be a woman and a man, and also very racially, you know, related, where the white woman kind of was elevated to this, you know, status of purity. And that meant that women were not working, you know, that white women had to sort of be protected, had to be at home where they would be safe, because their primary role was to further the white race. And so they had to be sort of put in this cage. It's funny, my fiance and I right now are rewatching Mad Men, and I'm really thinking a lot about that as I watch that show. But yeah, so I mean, you know, sometimes it can be helpful, for men who do want to explore, you know, this kind of glamour magic, like you were saying with your husband, that just to know that history, you know, just to think back, oh, you know, maybe right now I don't have access to these things, but historically, you know, it actually to be a man meant to be sort of ornate and adorned and, you know, sort of fashionable.
Yeah, I think we saw this a lot, this conversation pop up when we saw Harry Styles on the cover of Vogue. And there was a lot of conversation too about the privilege that Harry Styles holds, because we've seen this, you know, Luke talks about this too, is like trans individuals have been doing this for so long and it is a privilege. And wherever you are on the kind of spectrum of privilege and what intersections you're walking, there is massive amount of privilege in being able to experiment that way. Like even wearing nail polish is seen as very subversive and punk, you know. We saw like mesh and see-through, like chiffon type fabrics being worn by men, and that was like really saying something. And I think we can start to kind of poke and prod at the boundaries of what's possible for masculine presenting people to be able to adventure into.
That's a very good point. I mean, that's an important point. Like, you know, that we're talking about glamour magic sort of as like a spell or something that you're choosing to put on, but you're bringing up, you know, trans people who are saying, you know, this is who I am. Like, this is my identity, you know? So that's a very important distinction.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so funny because we see this, you brought up the animal kingdom and how often it's the opposite of, you know, in the animal kingdom, we see the males being very ornate and loud in color and behavior and all of that stuff. But I want to bring it back to you, and I'll give this one to you is another thing. And I think we are bringing up Alok so much, but truly they've been such a profound influence on my views on this too. So spirituality and how it intersects with glamour magic.
Yeah. So Alok was recently on an episode of We Can Do Hard Things, which is Glennon Doyle's podcast. And I happened to tune in, and I want to share this quote with everyone as sort of a way to close out this conversation today. So Alok said, "What people don't remember when they don't learn history is that a lot of what we now call feminine garb was actually ceremonial wear that people would wear to receive God. And it actually was about spirituality. So the way that I dress is not because I want to be seen as a woman or to be seen as non-binary. It's because I want to be a receptacle. I want to be a vessel for my purpose on earth. And that when I am dressed as myself, when I am myself, then I can channel truth and speak it," end quote.
Oh, I love that. And they say something on the For the Wild podcast about when we are fighting for equality across all of the different intersections, we're creating space for so much more brilliance, so much more depth, so much diversity. And, you know, this is just a small corner of how to explore that is playing with dress, playing with glamours. But it can be, you know, as superficial and as deep as you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So everyone that's listening, go out there, have fun with this and feel empowered by this. And also tell us what you think. We have this new email address. It's isotpod@gmail.com. Email in, tell us, you know, if you work with glamour magic or if you experiment with it, tell us how it goes. We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see you guys on the next one.
Thank you for listening to In Search of Tarot. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_. That's BIRDGERHL_. And you can follow me, Nick, at In Search of Tarot. This podcast is independently recorded, edited, and produced by us, which means that we rely solely on the generous support of our Patreon backers to make this podcast happen. If you'd like to lend us your support, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over on patreon.com/insearchoftarot.